Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know and that the mainstream media isn't reporting. Today's topic is a really special one. I really hope you'll join me for a very special 2 hours. The topic is Reflections on Fallujah. When is war just? And those of you that listen to my show know that every day I try to bring you news that goes under the radar in the mainstream media, and I try to give you facts that I can bring either from a variety of sources where some are news sources, but they're stories that don't get a lot of attention. Some of it is my own sources in Congress, in the administration. People tell me things, and I like to bring them to you, facts and facts and facts. But today I want to focus on analysis. You know, it seems to me that when you look at what happened in Fallujah, we know the facts. We know what happened, right? Four Americans, contractors, they were hired by our military as security for a food convoy. They were murdered. Their car, truck was bombed. And I think, to me, what was most disturbing was not even the murder itself. But see if you agree with me. I think what was most disturbing was the reaction of the public, of the hundreds of Iraqis, many of whom were cheering and smiling, and a number of whom dragged the bodies through the streets, attempting to kill, again, a corpse. Now, what is it that causes people to do that? Maybe it's our occupation of Iraq. Maybe that's unjust. Maybe these people don't represent most Iraqis. Maybe they do. I don't know. I'll tell you, these are really hard questions. And one of the things I think we can do here on the Inside Scoop is we can do some of the analysis you won't see in the mainstream press. You know, in the mainstream press, if you tried to ask a question, a broad philosophical question like, is war just? I think you'd be laughed out of the studios. Go ahead. You've got 1 minute, crossfire. Is war just? And people could discuss, you know, for 30 seconds, what wars are just? It just wouldn't work. Even on the McNeil News Hour, I think if you had 10 minutes, you'd be lucky. And yet today, in the next 2 hours, I really want to go through and I want to try to ask this most difficult question. And I don't claim to have all the answers or even any answers, but I think I've got some pretty good questions. And I think that every American should have an idea of when wars are just and when they aren't. Now, for some people, it's very simple. For those on the right, for those that support the Bush administration, all American wars are just. Any war we fight, got to be right. After all, America's doing it. And for some on the left, I would say it's the same level of simplicity. All America does is wrong. Every war we fight is wrong. No war is just. I mean, look, I understand pacifism. I respect that point of view. I don't share it. I don't say that no war is just. My question for you, and what I hope to explore in the next couple hours, is when is a war just? When are the United States wars just? And all over the world, when does it make sense to have war? Now, maybe you think very rarely. War is hell, Patton said. It's a nasty thing. And then there's the question of not just when a war is just, but what tactics in war are just. Is it just to try to kill civilians, to get your point across. And before you say, no, it's never just, well, what do you think about the bomb in Hiroshima, where we did kill civilians? I don't have, again, any easy answers, but I want to hear from you. If you think that the war in Iraq, is it more like the war in Vietnam? Did you think the war in Vietnam was just? How about the war in Korea? How about World War II? How about the Gulf War? What is it? What is it that makes war just? What is it that says it's a good idea? And when do we listen to the people that are terrorizing our forces there? And when do we say we're not going to give in to terrorists? You know, obviously the first thought I had as I saw what happened in Fallujah, other than being just horrified by it, is I remember what happened in Mogadishu in Somalia, when they pretty much did the same thing to our people and we left. And some would argue, well, you know, that made it more likely for people to attack us. But, you know, Bush says, and this is a direct quote, all of us can now agree that the fall of the Iraqi dictator has removed a source of violence, aggression, and instability in the Middle East, Bush says. Who would prefer that Saddam's torture chambers still be open? Who would wish that more mass graves were still being filled? Who would begrudge the Iraqi people their long-awaited liberation? Now, you know, I actually think that's somewhat eloquent. I'm sure Bush didn't write the speech, but it's a good point, speechwriter. I mean, who would prefer that Saddam's torture chambers be open? Who would begrudge these people their freedom? And yet, is it true that the fall of the Iraqi dictator has removed a source of violence, aggression, and instability in the Middle East? Let me quote from John Kerry. John Kerry said, foreign policy is not simplistic. They, Republicans, they want it to be simplistic. It isn't. It's nuanced. I have to agree with John Kerry here. I don't think it's so simple. And I'm of many minds about this. I oppose the war in Iraq. And yet, I'm not sure that we should leave right now. I want to hear from you. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. And what I really want to do is have a good discussion over the next couple of hours between you and me. I hope to learn something in these 2 hours. I hope you will learn something in the next 2 hours. I want to see if we can agree, though, that it is an important question. It's a vital question, and it's not something you're likely to hear discussed. I mean, you might go to college and take a course in political philosophy and talk in these broad philosophical terms, but then rarely do you get into real life, you know, I mean, real wars that we fought. You know, or you can be jingoistic, you can be Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh, you know, the U.S. is always right, and we're there to liberate them. Well, we were there to liberate the people of Vietnam, weren't we? We were there to free them. We were there to give them democracy, to protect them from the communist North Vietnamese. But I think the lesson of Vietnam is that the people didn't want that liberation. They didn't want to be freed if it meant that the United States was going to control them. They knew that the person we propped up in South Vietnam was our guy, not their guy. And to some extent, I think the Iraqis know the same. Who appointed the Iraqi government? Not the people of Iraq. George Bush appointed them. And yet, we're leaving July 1st. Is that a good idea? I mean, Bush wants to leave right before the election. Is that a good idea, or is it causing all of this trouble we have now? And why is it that Bush pushed off the elections in Iraq until after the U.S. elections? Might it be that he doesn't think he'll like the result? But please don't tell me that occupation is always bad. I don't agree. Are you saying that we were wrong on D-Day? We were wrong to go to France? That the people of France and the Netherlands didn't welcome us with open arms? Or if you want a more recent example, how about Kosovo, where the Kosovar Albanians were being massacred? Wasn't that a just war? Wouldn't it have been a just war for us to stop the genocide in Rwanda? I don't think these are simple questions. I don't think they're simple questions at all. And I want to hear from you what you think. Because I think that it's only fair to have a policy, to have principles. I don't think it's fair to say, oh, well, you know, I'm Irish Catholic, so I support the Irish in Northern Ireland, or I'm Irish Protestant, so I'm against the IRA. I don't think it's the same. I don't think you can just say that. That's not a rational reason for a position. And I've argued all kinds of things. I mean, folks that have listened to me know that, you know, I supported the war in Afghanistan. I don't support the war in Iraq. I supported the Persian Gulf War. I don't think the war in Vietnam was a good idea. In Israel, I support a fence to separate the two nations. I support two states. I don't support Palestinian terrorism. I don't support much terrorism. Now, can I draw a consistent thread through all of this? Well, I like to think I can. I hope I can. I should be able to, shouldn't I? I mean, shouldn't we be able to say when war is just and when it isn't? War is a vicious thing, right? It's a vicious, horrible, violent thing. Thousands, sometimes tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions can be killed in a war. It should never be done lightly. But are you willing to say that all wars are wrong? Or all wars are right? I hope we can get into a good, nuanced discussion over the next 2 hours. And again, I think this is something that you're not going to find on other radio shows. Maybe you will. I hope other people are discussing it. But I think my reflection on what happened in Fallujah is it ain't so easy, folks. It ain't so easy. As someone who didn't support the war in Iraq, I question whether we should leave. Whether we should leave June 30th. I don't know that Kucinich's solution, just cut and run, I don't know that it's the right one. I have no sympathy for the people who killed those Americans in the convoy, and yet, why did they do it? Why did they do it? Why were people cheering? Why were hundreds in the streets trying to mutilate and kill bodies that were already dead? What do you think? Help me out, folks. The number here is 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. Join in, 877-57-SCOOP on your dial. You can also send me an email by sending it to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Help me out. When do you think a war is just? Now, I know these are difficult philosophical questions. I don't expect you to have all the answers. I don't have all the answers, and I don't claim to. But what is it that happened in Fallujah? What happened? Is our occupation, an occupation, or is it a liberation? Right? Do the Iraqis want us there or not? Well, I think the answer is some do and some don't. What do we do in such a situation? What should be the doctrine? When is war just? I can't think of a more difficult question, but I'm going to give you a chance to ponder that a bit. And then I really hope you'll call in and join in the discussion. Again, the number is 877-577-2667. 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
4 years ago, the U.S. Department of Energy created a special program to compensate workers at federal nuclear facilities who may have been exposed to health-damaging radiation on the job. 4 years later, with some 22,000 applications for aid received and tens of millions of dollars spent on the system, a little more than 300 workers have received any contact from the Department of Energy, and only one check's been cut. At a Senate Energy Committee hearing this week, it was revealed the private contractor in charge of the Nuclear Worker Compensation Program charges twice as much for its services as it would cost the government to do the work itself. At present, the DOE spends $1 million a month on this particular contract.
As the Labor Department prepares to implement rule changes stripping overtime pay for as many as 8 million Americans, Illinois state lawmakers want nothing to do with the plan. The state legislature just sent the governor legislation blocking any changes to federal rules governing overtime pay for white-collar workers. And Wednesday, the AFL-CIO held a protest outside a Bush fundraiser in Washington, D.C. Kathy Stobird is a nurse in Pittsburgh who spoke at the demonstration.
President Bush's policies to end overtime pay will devastate the nursing profession by driving even more nurses out of hospitals, which will ultimately cause a patient care crisis in this country.
The Office of Management and Budget is currently reviewing the Bush administration's final overtime regulations and could approve them any day now.
Turbulent skies again for U.S. Airways. Less than a year out of bankruptcy, airline executives have told the workforce the company may go into Chapter 11 again unless it can cut costs by another $1 billion a year to compete with no-frills airlines. These would be on top of $1 billion a year worth of concessions union employees already committed to as part of the bankruptcy process. U.S. Airways pilots and mechanics unions this week called the proposals unacceptable and may lead a drive to call for the resignation of senior airline management.
Irish workers can breathe a little easier this week now that the government has issued Western Europe's first national ban on all workplace smoking. Pub owners are complaining about lost business due to relocated weddings and conferences, but polls are showing approximately 80% of Irish people support the ban.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If you hear President Bush tout his federal budget plan for next year as an achievement in his campaign, don't believe the hype. The Economic Policy Institute took a close look at the Bush budget and noted there are numerous funding increases in politically sensitive areas that, if Bush gets another term, are slated to take cuts that will offset their election year windfalls. A good example is the Department of Education. It stands to see a funding gain of more than 2% next year, then would face an average 1% cut in funding for the next four.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing maybe what's the most important question of all. I don't know. It's certainly one of the most important questions one can ask. And I'm going to ask it, even though I think someone may think me presumptuous to ask it. I mean, after all, it's a vital question. When is war just? Frankly, it surprises me that people don't ask that question. I mean, after all, you would think it's a very important one. And yet the question's so broad and so difficult that I think few people are willing to touch it, you know? And yet, isn't that something our president should do? What is going wrong in Iraq? What is happening in Fallujah? Vice President Cheney said, quote, "I really do believe we will be greeted as liberators," unquote. Rumsfeld, in February 2003, predicted the war, quote, could last 6 days, 6 weeks, I doubt 6 months, unquote. He wrote in February of two, he said into February 2003. He doubted it would last to August of last year. We know that George Bush, May of last year, put up a sign that said mission accomplished. He thought the war was over. Is it? Now we know, the Secretary of the Army, Les Bromlis, has said, this is another quote, "I regret we were not more foresighted here. We simply were not prepared for the kind of counterinsurgency that attacked our convoys and our soldiers, as has proven to be." So why weren't we prepared? Why weren't we prepared for this war in Iraq? What is it about this war that is very different from other wars? Is it a just war? Let me know what you think. Caller, you're on the line. Thanks for trying to answer this very difficult question that I pose. What's your name and where are you from?
My name's Rich. I'm from Chicago.
Hey, Rich from Chicago. What do you think?
Well, I might be off the beaten path here, but I heard something that was really disturbing yesterday, and I'm kind of curious what you think about this. And that is that, you know, Bush and this extreme Christian right are using this whole thing as like a tinderbox to start this Armageddon type of situation. What do you think that there's any chance that there's some of that in play here, that the president believes that, you know, we need to keep this going in Babylon and biblical ties and...
Well, I think,
is it as much corporate as it is religious?
I think there are definitely people who believe that. There are definitely people on the Christian right who believe that. There's no question that, in fact, you had the one army general, and I forget his name right now, who said that, you know, this is a war for Christianity and, Ann Coulter, jerk that she is saying, you know, let's kill their leaders and convert them to Christianity. I mean, there are definitely people who think that, you know, Revelations talks about this great war in the Middle East. I'm not willing to ascribe those motivations to the president just yet. I don't know that that's the case. I haven't seen evidence of that. In my view, it is corporate. From Paul O'Neill, we know that they divided up the Iraqi oil fields 10 days after Bush became president. So I don't know that we need to find this religious motivation to know why the president's there. I don't know which is worse. I would say there are definitely people who support President Bush who are doing it for religious reasons. Like I said, I personally wouldn't call the president on that myself.
Well, there was a front line, and maybe you saw it, that talked about the eagle's nest or the hawks, you know, and how Wolfowitz and all these people, you know, 10 years earlier with the first Bush that had carved up Iraq and tried to do this domino theory. If they could get a government to fall in the Middle East, that perhaps they could try to get democracy to...
Well,
work its way through the Middle East.
I would say that there are idealistic people like Wolfowitz who sincerely believe And I think Wolfowitz sincerely believes that he can install democracy into Iraq and it suddenly it'll burst like a flower across the Arab world. I think he sincerely believes that. Listen, you can attack him for being wrong and for being short-sighted and all that kind of stuff, and I'd agree with you. But actually, in some ways, I think Wolfowitz is more sincere than Bush. Bush, I think, is largely there for the oil. Wolfowitz really believes that we can instill, or maybe I should say install, democracy in Iraq. And in fact, one of my questions about this whole is war just thing is when can we install democracy? I mean, we did do it in Germany and Japan, right?
Yeah.
But we're having troubles in Iraq. Why do you think? Well, let me ask you this question. Do you consider World War II to be a just war?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
We came into it kind of after the fact.
Okay.
It bubbled over, and then we came in as trying to be liberators and help.
Okay. What about Afghanistan? You consider that to be a just war?
Well, again, that started to get very perverse, and we needed the help, and we went in a little bit more as a coalition. So I guess there was a little bit more there.
Yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, like I said, these aren't easy questions I'm asking.
Right.
I understand that, and I don't expect everyone to have simple answers. But, I mean, I think you've got good points. I think that there's a difference between when you've been attacked first, as happened in World War II, as happened in Afghanistan, and when you haven't been attacked.
Yeah, but Iraq, you know, what's interesting is they talk about how Saddam, you know, ruled that with an iron fist and, you know, killed all these people. And,
right.
Well, we've got a lot of people dying there right now. And now you hear the rhetoric on, like, Fox and other news saying, we need to go in with an iron fist. It almost sounds like us trying to become a Saddam in order to control people that were controlled by the same type of dictator in the first place. Now, do we come in and fill that void?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Rich. You know,
one of the things
that I found really ironic and Orwellian in a way that, you know, maybe only Jon Stewart can catch. I don't know that other people in the media catch. But Bush was out there on TV saying Iraq was under the iron rule of one man, and now it's free. And then, well, think about it. Who appointed the Iraqi government?
Exactly.
One man, George Bush.
Yeah, we did.
Exactly.
Right.
So
we set this all up, and when it worked for us, it was fine. And when it didn't work for us, oops, got to go. You know?
And I don't know. Would we leave? You know, I don't know that that's going to solve anything either.
Well, it's going to be a void again, isn't it? And it's just going to, the same thing's going to happen. But we're creating so much hate and disdain, and we're doing this on our own. If we don't become a world community, this is one planet that's floating through the ether, you know. We need to kind of get this working together. We are isolating ourselves to the rest of this planet. And there's enough people sitting back watching us that actually want us to stumble and fall on this.
Sure.
You know?
You're absolutely right. And
if we don't come together on this, and one other thing, I think I brought this up before, was this rhetoric, if we go out there and saying it's okay to assassinate or bring down world leaders, when other governments become stronger or other terrorist governments and openly broadcast that we should go out there and assassinate world leaders that we think don't work in along our line, why can't a China or a new Russia or a new terrorist government say the same thing? We think the American president is dangerous and rogue, and we need to assassinate him to make this world safe again.
Well, Rich, I thank you for your call. I think you made a lot of good points.
Okay, thank you.
You know, Rich did make a lot of good points. I think there's no question that the rest of the world, which was totally supporting us before 9/11, right? I should say right after 9/11, right? You had the French newspaper, we were all Americans now. And now, throughout the world, I mean, we're hated, we're feared. It's really a dangerous thing. On the other hand, I don't know that I'm always against assassination. I mean, is killing Osama bin Laden assassination? If so, well, call me guilty. I guess I support it. I mean, I think you can argue that, well, you know, we're a democracy and they're not, but then you can point to 2000, right? You can point to the Supreme Court choosing Bush. That wasn't the wish of the American people. These are tough issues. These are tough issues. Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from? Caller, you there? Did I lose my caller? Hello? All right, I lost my caller. Look, these are difficult questions. Call in 877-57-SCOOP. Let me know what you think. When is assassination justified? When is it proper to knock off a foreign leader? Maybe it never is. But what if the leader isn't chosen by the people, right? I'm willing to say that it is never, ever appropriate to assassinate a democratically elected leader. I think that's a fair point, right? Can we agree on that? If the person is elected democratically, then clearly you can't knock him off. But I don't know. Osama bin Laden has a lot of support. I don't know that he'd win a democratic election in the Arab world. Maybe he would. Maybe he would. I don't think so. I like to think not. I like to think that's not the case. I had a bunch of callers here. They all left while I was talking to Rich. But again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. When is war just? What are we doing wrong in Iraq? And should we stay? You know, I mean, maybe you were against the war, as I was, but maybe at this point we have to stay so we don't cut and run. Or is that what happened in Vietnam? Is that exactly what happened in Vietnam? You know, maybe the war wasn't right to begin with, but once we're there, now we have to stay. How do we get out? Is Iraq another Vietnam? What do you think? Is Iraq going to lead us down to this long, long history in Vietnam where we have this government, right? But it's just our installed government. It's just the government installed by the United States of America and doesn't have any legitimacy among its own people. Is that so different from Vietnam? Let me know what you think. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. You can also send me an email by going to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. And while you're there, click on a donation to RadioPower.org. It's only through them that I'm able to give you this stream over the Internet. And they welcome your donations. It's entirely listener-sponsored. And hey, that's how I'm on the air. I know these are difficult questions, folks. I don't, and in fact, feel free to call in even if you're not sure how you feel, because I'm not sure how I feel. I've got some ideas here, and I'm going to go through them throughout the couple hours. But I, don't you agree it's a good, fair question to ask? I mean, shouldn't we figure out when is war just? And I got to tell you, I think my listeners are different from, certainly not the Rush Limbaugh ditto heads that accept everything America does is right. But I don't think most of you would say that everything America does is wrong either. When is war just? It's a tough question, and we're going to try to answer it here on the Inside Scoop. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after these messages.
It's back. The thing that just won't die has returned in mutated form to terrorize the good people of our country, gorging itself on gargantuan fistfuls of our First and Fourth Amendment rights. The thing was once known as TIA, Total Information Awareness, the Orwellian slash Frankensteinian creation of John Poindexter, the disgraced, convicted, and totally loopy former operative from the Reagan White House. Brought in from the cold by George W., Poindexter set up shop in a wing of the Pentagon called DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. At DARPA, the maniacal Poindexter put together his TIA, a supercomputerized program to gather every scrap of data there is on everybody, from our bank accounts to video rentals, our medical histories to photos of protests we've attended. All of this was to be sifted and sorted, ostensibly to detect suspicious behavior that would tag someone as a possible terrorist, noting that this would make millions of Americans suspected terrorists and amount to a wholesale invasion of our people's privacy. The public screamed, Congress cut off TIA's funding, and Poindexter ultimately was forced back to disgraceland. But wait, TIA did not die. It morphed from DARPA to ARDA, Advanced Research and Development Activity, another secretive spook agency. While publicly pretending to kill TIA, congressional leaders had quietly funneled money to ARDA to resurrect TIA as the thing, which is now pursuing the exact same assault on our privacy as TIA was, even using some of Poindexter's old crew. ARDA says that its thing can wolf down a petabyte or more of data. How much is that? A petabyte will hold 40 pages of text on every man, woman, and child in the world. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help us finally drive a stake through the heart of this thing, call the Center for Democracy and Technology, 202-637-9800.
Well, I wonder who that could be. Can I help you?
Ah! Everybody, run for your lives!
A pack of crazed baboons. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a quieter floor with Plectanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Plectanium holds onto nails better. That means your subflooring won't rub against them and will be less likely to squeak. Plectanium plywood. Build it better.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Toner and photoreceptor sold separately.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop, and we're talking about, well, maybe one of the most difficult questions that you can talk about. We're talking about war, but we're talking in general. When is war just? When have American wars been just? Is our war in Iraq a good idea? I mean, aren't we freeing all these people? Or maybe the people don't want us there. Is Iraq going to be just like another Vietnam? These are difficult questions, but we're going to explore them over the next 2 hours, and I'm going to do it with your help. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Call in toll-free or email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. I've had my lights light up quite a bit, and then they go away. So I don't know who it is that's calling in and hanging up, but let me explain what happens when you call in to my show. When you call in, basically, you get in, and you're on hold, and you listen to the show while I'm talking. And then I will get to you. So don't think that if you call in and you just hear the radio broadcast, you're not in queue. You are, and you will be gotten to eventually. So I hope you folks that hung up will call back. Again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And hey, when you do call in, turn your computer down or your radio down so that you don't get confused by the lag. It seems to me that the war in Iraq is quite different from the war in Afghanistan in lots of ways. One of which, of course, is we were attacked by Al-Qaeda that was being supported by the Taliban in Afghanistan. We weren't attacked by Iraq. Another, though, maybe a more subtle difference, is that if you notice what happened in Afghanistan, we were aiding local Afghanis. We were actually supporting the Northern Alliance. In fact, the Northern Alliance did most of the fighting. Now, the Northern Alliance is a group of Afghanis. They actually, in fact, have a slightly different ethnic group. I don't know if I should say slightly, a different ethnic group from the Pashtuns, the main ethnic group of Afghanistan. But they were local to the region. In fact, they helped let us know where the caves were and how to attack people in it. And I think that the government in Afghanistan is seen as more legitimate among its people than the government in Iraq. And that may be why we're not seeing as much trouble in Afghanistan as we're seeing in Iraq. Of course, in both cases, we're largely taking over the capitals. We're taking over Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan, and Baghdad, the capital of Iraq. And we're not out in the countryside maybe like we should be. I think if you notice, all of our politicians that fly to Baghdad, they go to the green zone. They go to this small area that's protected by American troops. And they don't go to places like Fallujah. Well, we now know that the people in Fallujah, or at least some people in Fallujah, don't feel liberated. They're not happy to see us. Maybe they didn't like Saddam Hussein. I don't know many people who do. But what they're telling us is that these aren't Ba'athists anymore. Ba'athists was, of course, the party of Saddam Hussein. These aren't the people attacking us anymore. It's not Saddam Hussein's old guys, right? It's the people, or at least some people. And I want to know why you think they're attacking us. Why don't you think they feel liberated? I mean, wasn't that the whole purpose of going to war in Iraq? Okay, all right, originally Bush said weapons of mass destruction. That's true. But then he changed his mind. He said, well, it's all about liberating Iraq. Well, if it's all about liberating Iraq, why aren't the people happier that we're there? Are these just a few people? Is that what it is? Is it just a few troublemakers? Or do you think that, as in Vietnam, we're maybe not wanted? The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I want to know from you what wars the U.S. has fought that you think were just and what weren't. World War II, Vietnam, Korea, the Gulf War, the war in Kosovo. Should we have gone to war in Rwanda? What makes it right? What makes it wrong? And I also like to explore, I guess, a larger question of when secession is right. You know, a lot of wars are fought because one group of people in a country wants to leave that country and form their own country. I mean, there's a lot of examples, right? I mean, Ethiopia, South Africa, Israel, Chechnya, Rwanda, the Basques, the Kurds, Northern Ireland, Chiapas in Mexico, Bangladesh, Tibet, the American Civil War, the American Revolutionary War. You know, it's interesting, when we study the American Revolutionary War, we don't focus on the fact that we were seceding from Britain. You could say it was about democracy and no taxation without representation. We were seceding from Great Britain. Was our secession just? And then comes the American Civil War, and we're fighting the secession, right? I mean, the Union's fighting now. Of course, the South wanted slaves, and we can talk about all that. But isn't it interesting that the two primary wars in American history, one we are seceding, and the other we are preventing secession? So can you say that secession is always right or always wrong? I mean, or is it just the victors that get to write the history? What do you think? The number is 877-57-SCOOP. We're going to go to a caller. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
My name is Robert, and I'm from Tennessee.
Hi, Robert from Tennessee. What do you think about what I've been saying?
Well, I think that sometimes it's helpful to look at it back in a smaller scope or a smaller scale.
Okay.
Look at the governments or a country as a person and ask yourself, is it right to murder a person? What situations give you the right to murder a person?
It's a good question. When do you think it is right to kill a person?
I mean,
if they're about to kill you,
about to kill you, obviously.
Okay.
If you see a person attacking another person.
Okay, about to kill them.
Right.
So you stop A before he kills B.
Right.
Okay.
A lot of times with internal matters or things that were going on in Iraq, civil wars, usually if the government is made up by the people, so if the government does go too absolutely corrupt, the people eventually revolt. I mean, history shows that over and over again.
Well, maybe, but sometimes governments are so tough and so strong and so murderous that it actually makes it very hard for the people to. I mean, I don't know if you even know about what's going on in Algeria. It's not something discussed very often. But Algeria, the government's so harsh and so cruel that whenever people try to revolt, they just kill tens of thousands of them, and it gets virtually no press because they keep the press out. You know, this is going on all over the world. So let me ask you this. Let's get to some specifics, all right? I understand your point, and I agree with you, by the way, about, you know, an individual and a murderer. What do you think about our war in Iraq? What do you think about what's going on in Fallujah? Should we be there?
I personally don't think we should be there. I personally feel that it's about the oil.
Okay. And now that we are there, and they attacked our American citizens who were convoys, I mean, do you think that we should leave, or do you think that now that we're there and we've taken, you know, we've gotten rid of Saddam Hussein, if we leave, it'll just be a civil war? I mean, what do you think?
I think we made the mess. We need to clean it up.
Yeah. Well, that's John Kerry's position that, exactly that. I mean, John Kerry actually is interesting because he says that if Bush hadn't lied to him about weapons of mass destruction, he might not have supported the war in Iraq. But, let me ask you about that though. Weapons of mass destruction. They didn't have it. That was a big lie that the president told us. If a country, though, has weapons of mass destruction, nuclear, chemical, biological weapons, and let's say it's run by a dictator that can attack the United States, would war be justified then? I'm asking you a tough question.
I know that's a tough question, but, you know, I mean, We use the word dictator pretty freely.
Yeah, we do. Hey, after all, our president wasn't elected by a majority of the American people.
Right.
So who are we to talk, right?
Right. And the number of countries out there, I mean, you look at, say, North Korea.
Right.
I mean, they have the stuff, but we don't go in after them.
And they could hit Los Angeles.
Right.
Where Saddam Hussein could barely hit, you know, the country next door.
Right.
One of the interesting things about North Korea, and I remember because I was working in Congress at the time, is when I began working in Congress, which was in March 2001, North Korea didn't have nuclear weapons. And they developed them while Bush was focusing on Iraq. which is actually very interesting. Here we is, we claim Iraq has nuclear weapons. They don't. We go to war with them. And while we're doing it, this other country, who, by the way, Kim Jong-il, I assume you know, Robert, is every bit as vicious as Saddam Hussein. He's killed thousands of his own people, starved them, really a horrible dictator.
Uh-huh.
He developed nuclear weapons while we were focused on Iraq.
And as much as I despise the guy, that I personally feel for his move, as far as a strategic move, that was a smart play.
Yeah, well, I didn't say he was stupid.
Yeah.
You can be evil and smart at the same time.
Yeah, those are the scary ones.
Hey, Robert, anything else?
No, that'll do it.
Thanks very much for your call. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hey, good afternoon. This is Roy. I'm out here in New Mexico.
Hi, Roy, in New Mexico. These are tough questions.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Was on there and got sidetracked and went away and came back.
Well, I'm glad to have you back. Hey, listen, I'm asking the toughest questions I think I can possibly ask, but you know what? Sometimes I think the questions are more important than the answers. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you, what do you think? When is war just?
War is just to defend the country or to defend an allied country.
Okay. What if that country we're defending is not a democracy? Does it matter?
Yes. Well, that actually is the wrong question. The question needs to go beyond that. Why are they an ally of ours?
Well, okay. No, that's a good point.
But, you know, if we've been careful in setting up the alliances, you know, like...
I'm thinking Saudi Arabia.
The last good war, quote unquote, was World War II. We were supporting England. We were supporting the Allies during the lead up to the war, and I think that was totally just.
What about Korea? I would say the South Koreans are pretty happy today that we were there, and yet it was a vicious, hard fought war. What do you think?
Who knows? We can't go back and change that thing around, because what if they had just become a satellite of Red China?
Right.
And because South Korea and North Korea didn't use up all of the assets in fighting each other, perhaps, you know, we can't say if we hadn't have done it, situations would have been different today. Would they have been as bad, or would they have been worse? We don't know.
See, I guess what I want to do is, and I don't know if it's polls or what, but I guess my rough cut at this is I want to see whether the people want us there. And I'd be willing... Go ahead.
The thing that just makes me madder than all get out about this whole thing...
Yeah.
...was that in the mid-90s, GW went out and set up First Amendment zones out in front of the governor's palace in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
He did everything that he's doing on a national basis, he did on a small basis in the state of Texas.
Yeah.
The guy's a bully.
Yeah.
Now, when things happened and the trade towers went down, my very first thought, and this thing about Rice making the speech, or not making the speech that she was going to make that day,
yeah,
triggered it. And it was like, wait a second. Wasn't that what they were talking on Foxhole News just before I saw that plane hit the towers? Because I was watching C-SPAN.
I'm sure they were.
Morning.
Roy, I'm sure they were. You're an early riser, by the way, if you were up that early.
I was watching Morning Journal or whatever.
In New Mexico, it's what, 6 and 7 in the morning when the plane hit?
We're 2 hours behind.
Right.
And they actually went to the congressional coverage. I went to Foxhole News, and they were talking, the Washington Morning Journal, I think, was talking about the missile defense.
I'll tell you why I'm pretty sure they were, Roy, because I remember I was in Congress at the time. I remember very clearly, I think all Americans remember exactly where they were on September 11th.
My first thought when I saw that second plane over the guy's shoulder at Fox News was, so much for the friggin' missile defense system.
Yeah. I remember because we had a hearing that very morning, we Democrats, because the Democrats had a proposal to take money from the missile defense system that Bush wanted and to give it to counterterrorism efforts, to actually try to stop terrorism. And we didn't have the votes. The Republicans were going to beat us on that.
Right.
And that's what was happening the morning of September 11th, and I remember that because I was there.
And then after that, we're going to go in and we're going to blow up, we're going to bomb Afghanistan back to the Stone Age. Well, my God, they were already back to the Stone Age.
Yeah.
And we've got, you know, I would have had nothing with putting, you know, I don't know, a couple divisions, you know, of the SEALs or the gung-ho guys. Go in and nail some of these folks.
Yeah.
But what are we bombing innocent donkeys and civilians for?
Well, you know,
and
Roy,
when we take this little group there in Kabul and give the Taliban the rest of the country, and so now we wiped out the Taliban. Now it's just the old-fashioned warlords, the drug pushers.
That's all true.
We have screwed up everything involved in this whole circumstance.
Okay, Roy.
And then when we go after Iraq, I mean, you know, you got to sit there and you got to say, well, I know Saddam was a bad guy. Well, damn it, if he was such a bad guy, why did we prop him up for 20 years?
Yep, in the 1980s. Rumsfeld and Cheney, both.
You know, it's just, but to go back to the bigger question of when is a war just? A war is just to protect ourselves or protect innocents from being overrun by bad people. Or if an ally of ours is in a, gets invaded. And I cannot see any other thing. And war is an admission that diplomacy has failed.
That's true. And it should be the last resort. I think we can all agree. It should definitely be the last resort.
And I guess the thing that made me so damn mad, I was lied into a war 35 years ago when I went down and joined the Navy Reserves.
You in Vietnam?
We were supposed to do all that crap.
Were you in Vietnam, Roy?
Well, nah, I was floating around out in Yankee. I got my GEDUNK medals. I was, you know, hell, I was a draft dodger. That's why I joined the reserves.
Okay. Just like our president.
No. The big difference is I did my active duty time.
Okay, that's true. You served. You're right. He didn't show up.
Maybe I've got some survivor guilt. Maybe, you know, because I skated through. It was no big deal. But I was lied into that war.
Yeah, Gulf of Tonkin was a lie.
We were lied to the public.
Right.
We're lied into this war. Well, by God, I've got a 2-year-old grandson, and if I raise enough hell now, maybe 20 years from now, he won't be lied into a war.
Well, I appreciate your comments, Roy. Thanks so
and
much.
That's my goal.
Thanks
so
very much.
I think you brought up
a lot of really good points that some of which I want to address more in this hour. I mean, he really did, talking about, you know, when you support allies, when do you attack if it can hurt innocent civilians. These are tough questions. These are tough questions. Let's go to another caller. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
Evelyn from Houston.
Hi, Evelyn from Houston. What do you think? When is war just?
Well, I agree just about with everything that Roy said.
Okay.
He stole some of my thunder.
All right. Well, go ahead. You can repeat it. I mean, people have different ways of looking at this, and I got some tough questions based on what Roy said. But go ahead. Tell me, what do you think in general?
Well, I agree with him. There's you know, I have a 20-year-old son that's a vegetarian and a pacifist. I mean,
okay.
You know, under no circumstances should you be violent, and, you know, then there's reality.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, you know, if you're attacked, if you, your allies, or like when we see things that are happening in other countries, and especially if you can get other countries to come with you to help out,
right.
Like when Yugoslavia broke up, then that, you know, there's some justification there. This war, though, this was totally, totally George Bush's baby, the shrub.
Yep.
I mean, first of all, I totally agree, being someone from Texas, and I've lived here for almost 29 years, that he runs the country like he did Texas. And
you know, I'm sorry, he's really, you know, people think badly about Texas now because of George Bush. And
absolutely.
I feel bad for you just because, you know, your state, I think it's a bad rap just because.
Absolutely. If this is I saw a T-shirt that said somewhere in a Texas village is missing an idiot.
Right, right. Send him home. Send him home.
And you know, what really bothers me is that so much of this is, it's how he ran his businesses.
Yeah.
I mean,
into the ground, you mean?
He brought his businesses to the ground and had other people pull them out, and then he ran off with the money. I mean, this is not a generalization. It's true.
Right.
From everything I've read.
No, I've actually done stories both on his AWOL, on his Harkin Energy. I mean, a lot of things that people aren't talking about.
Well, Martha gets jail, and for Harkin Energy, he gets nothing.
Right.
Not that I like Martha, but she was railroaded.
No, exactly. I did a whole show on that. Let me go back to the question of war, though. What if our ally, I'm going to give you a specific example. One of our allies in the region is a country by the name of Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia has given, according to Craig Unger's book, given more than $1 billion to George Bush's family.
Mm-hmm.
It is a dictatorship. In fact, it treats women worse than any country on earth now. It used to be second to the Taliban. Now it's the worst mistreatment of women. 13 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia, and yet it's an ally. And in fact, many argue that we went to war in the Persian Gulf War, and largely went to war again to protect Saudi Arabia from Saddam Hussein. What do you do when you have an ally like Saudi Arabia? I mean, is war just then?
To fight for with them?
To fight for, let's say Iraq invades Saudi Arabia. I mean, they invaded Kuwait. Kuwait was not the most democratic country on earth. And yet, I guess I have to think that the Persian Gulf War, and you may disagree with me on this, is that was kind of justified, even though Kuwait wasn't the greatest country on earth. Because
I agree. I mean, now of course we know that there's all these, you know, the babies in incubators. That was a bunch of hogwash.
Right, it's all lies.
More of the stuff. But I agree. I think that you know, you may not always like your allies, but if you are going to be allies, then you have to support them. And another country invading one of your allies is not a good reason. Plus, let's face it, it's to our interest to keep Saudi Arabia happy because they're the ones that send us the oil.
I think what we have to do with our allies that are not as nice
pristine
as they should be is I think we should be putting a lot of pressure on them to
yes
do internal change. And if it works out right, then you can have a country. I mean, I can give you examples, good examples. Taiwan and South Korea are two
right
examples of countries that only exist really because of U.S. support. And yet these are countries that have grown from being authoritarian regimes to really being pretty good democracy. In fact, in Taiwan recently, they're going to count the votes there. So I guess they're better than we are. They're going to actually have a recount. So I guess the answer is you can transform a country. But if they're not going to transform, Saudi Arabia, I think, is an example of a country that just hasn't gone anywhere, or Egypt for that matter. You know, I can think of the Shah Iran or Marcos in the Philippines.
Right.
Then when that leader is overthrown, we're hated. You know, we supported the vicious dictator.
Well, that's true. Well, I really believe, you know, I've been saying to my 16-year-old son, you know, I said, do you hear about all these things in the future? You know, the big bad corporation is running the world and this and that. And I said, we used to say hogwash, and I'm at the point where I'm beginning to believe it. Did you ever read the story, The Handmaid's Tale?
I haven't.
Oh, it's by Margaret Atwood. It's wonderful. There is such parallel with this, I just can't tell you. The extreme religious right is in effect, and they have a big war with the Oceania, or the people across the sea. And there's this big religious upheaval, and everything is conservative now. Women can no longer work. They're not allowed to read, they can't write, this type of thing. And there's this big rah-rah for the war, and the crux of the story is they sent so many guys over there, they got poisoned with the different whatevers they were exposed to, and now they're sterile and they're having problems, you know, creating more children again.
Yep.
From there.
Yep.
But it's like the horror story, and it's like, you know, this is, everybody should read this book because you can see so many similarities in it.
Well, that's a good example. The book I've been rereading is George Orwell's 1984.
Oh yes.
Because to me, I can't think of a clearer example when I see the White House, you know, change history. I mean, when George Bush said, "Oh, we had to go into Iraq. Saddam Hussein wouldn't let the inspectors in." My head was spinning. It was now.
Oh,
wait, I remember that.
Time, you know, we talk with our kids and each other, and it's like, you know, this is doublespeak. I mean, 1984 just came a few years later. It's depressing and it's scary. And what really bothers me is that we have people. What people really think is patriotism in this country, it isn't. It's not sitting and going, being a yes man. Patriotism is having the guts to stand up and agree or disagree.
I couldn't agree with you more. We the people are in charge here, and sometimes I think Prince George doesn't realize that.
Oh no, no, we are only we're the cannon fodder, and you know, if I have the 20-year-old's gay, so he's not going to go into the service
right
unless he's an avowed pacifist. But my other one, who's who's going to be 16. I mean, I think he would join the service if there was a legitimate war to fight.
Right.
And
well, I'll tell you something.
As much as I'd hate to see him go, I would support him on that.
After the war, after the attacks in Afghanistan,
oh,
I was ready to join up. I mean, I guess I'm not that old, but I guess I'm too old to join the military. I when I saw what they did at the World Trade Center, I was angry. I was ready to fight back. I couldn't think of a more just war. I was ready to declare war, in fact, formally, have a nice congressional declaration of war. I mean, I was ready to go to the max. I couldn't have felt differently about Iraq. It was a totally different war.
Day and night, you were absolutely correct. I mean, what we did when we went in there was really good. What bothers me is that these people do not have the support over there, our military men now, that they need. It's like, oh, well, it's in the background. And it's turning into every Afghan war.
Yeah. I'll tell you, Evelyn, I really appreciate your call because I hear so much. I hear people on the far right, you know, we know them, America, right or wrong, we always do right. But I also hear people on my left, and I respect your son that's a pacifist, but I disagree with him. I'm not willing to say that war is never good. I think if
that's
we sit
right.
back and we let ourselves be attacked, and we don't fight back, then we just get attacked more. So I really like, and I'm glad that you, Roy, everyone that's called has had really a nuanced position, and I think that's the right answer. I don't know what the answer is, but I don't think it's clearly black or white. And
When you get to be I'm 51, or will be 51 soon, you learn that things are not always black and white, and sometimes you have to, make deals with the devil, such as Saudi Arabia, whatever. Because we have reasons, we have reasons that we have to be there. But I think you're right. You know, this positive and negative social sanction done within the country, our own, and done with other countries really makes a difference. Look at drunk driving. When I grew up, everybody drank.
Yeah, or smoking has gone way down too by peer pressure.
Yeah, so that really made a big difference. When I think about social change or changes that we can make. I like to think about the drunk, the mad group because they did a wonderful job of turning it around.
Hey, Evelyn, thanks so much for your call. I hope you'll call into my show again sometime.
Oh, and I listen to you every day.
Oh, terrific.
And I've already sent my money in, so.
Wonderful. And tell your friends, too.
I will.
Great. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
Hello, Mark. My name is Mike. I'm from Minnesota.
Oh, Mike from Minnesota. Mike is my regular. He calls virtually every day, but I'm always very happy to hear your voice, Mike. What do you think about all this?
Well, walk me through that whole thing again. First of all, I want to tell you that I think this topic is fundamentally important to really the answers that are happening or that need to be answered throughout the world today.
What surprises me is that you don't see this topic talked about everywhere.
And it's the first thing every one of us somewhere in our subconscious has to deal with the minute anybody is anyone is harmed because of any type of a war. So it is a fundamental thing that really helps us all decide which direction we're going. So, I agree with you. I mean, I'm just going to pick out some of the things I heard, but I agree with you that sometimes you have to have a war. You cannot just black and white say you can't have war.
I mean, I respect people who are pacifists. I mean, I respect their view. I don't think they're... I mean, by definition, they're not harmful people, but I think it's a bit naive.
I think they're ahead of their time.
Maybe so.
What we're really trying to do here is our society, and and I should not speak that way. I should globally, we should all be trying to get to a point where we do eradicate war, and it's unnecessary. But to say we can't have any, you're going to let a lot of defenseless people die in a situation like that. So, I think that.
So how can you tell, Mike? Here's the ultimate question: when is a war just, and when is it not just?
I don't think we've had a legitimate war. Chances are, I don't know about Korea, probably since Second World War.
So, how about Kosovo?
Pardon me?
How about Kosovo?
Excuse me, I'm wrong about that. Yes, that was just. Anytime you're going to go in and save a group, yeah.
I very much supported the war in Kosovo.
Kosovo, maybe because it was a Clinton administration and the man has humanity inside of him, and that's why we were there. I don't know, there was no... I don't know how much financial gain we were maybe protecting in that situation. I don't think anything.
I don't think it was financial.
I think it was purely humanitarian. Yes, that was definitely. I think we saved a lot of lives. Unfortunately, a lot of them were lost before we got there.
Yeah.
How about Rwanda?
For sure.
I would have. I think we should have intervened in Rwanda.
How about Sierra Leone, the one that I like to bring up? When I read about that in 94 or whatever, it turned my stomach. They were going in and chopping limbs off of everyone in a village. And, I mean, you know, fundamentally war is wrong. And we have to try to get to that point. But when there's such gross injustices, you have to go protect a certain amount of people. So it can be justified.
The other thing I think is that when you go in for clearly just reasons, most of the world understands. Most of the world supported us going into Afghanistan. They didn't support us in Iraq. In Kosovo, they didn't want to act, but when we showed them the way, most Europeans came around and supported that war. I think that international support is not the be all and end all. I don't think the UN should control whether we go to war or not. But at the same time, I think it's a good. Why not? Because I don't entirely trust the United Nations. I don't think the United Nations is the most democratic institution. It you know, a lot of the countries in the United Nations are not democracies. We went into Kosovo without the United Nations. Remember, the United Nations put them in safe havens that were then bombed by the Serbs. So the United Nations has not always done such a good job.
They don't get the job done then, huh?
Well, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I'm just saying it's not the United Nations per se. What it is international support. When Canada says, United States, I think you're wrong, I think we need to look over our shoulder when our best ally in Canada says, you know, so I think we have to listen to countries we respect. If Cuba or China or Syria says we're wrong, I don't think we have to care.
And I don't think we do.
Or France or Germany or Canada or Italy or Spain says we're wrong, I think we should listen.
I completely agree with that.
How I guess distinguish from the UN from.
Well, if we don't have the UN, who do we have? We have to look at this thing as a global thing. Obviously, we can't trust our government specifically to be able to say, oh, if you feel that way, go for it, whatever. We can't, because obviously we've got a group in there now that has got some money and a vendetta on their minds, and they're over there killing innocents. The whole sad thing about wars is, you know, the majority of the people are little kids and women and families. And
yep.
I mean, what is the, where is it, when is it okay to do that? I mean, wow, you gotta have something serious going on.
They're tough questions. Hey, Mike, it's the top of the hour, and I gotta go to a commercial. But I wanna thank you very much for your call. You've raised some great questions. And, coming up after the commercial break, I wanna hear, I know I got some callers on the line. Hang on, callers. We're gonna get to you. Thanks so much for your call, Mike. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark. Good job. Great.
I hope my callers stay around, the ones that are holding after the break, because we're gonna get back. I wanna raise what Mike raised. I wanna know what happens if you kill children? What happens? I mean, I think we can all agree no one should be trying to kill children, but what if accidentally you're trying to kill some vicious terrorist and he's got children next to him? Is it just to shoot back when someone's shooting at you but has a child by their side? These are difficult questions. I don't have all the answers, but we can explore them together here on the Inside Scoop right after these messages. The number is, if you want to join in, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Callers, hang on. We'll be right back.
Hear about the Loopy Syn Fuels tax loophole today on Hightower Radio. Old loopholes never die. They just get loopier and loopier. One such is a special tax break gouged into federal law back in 1980 by corporate lobbyists. In response to the energy crisis of the time, this loophole was ostensibly created to give companies an incentive to devise marketable alternatives to imported oil. But all it really has done is give companies an excuse to dodge paying the taxes they owe to Uncle Sam. The loophole is the Synfuels tax credit for companies that reprocess coal to create new synthetic fuels. But the law's provisions are so vague that corporations have been able to claim the tax break even if their reprocessing doesn't work, doesn't reduce our dependence on oil, actually uses oil products in the so-called reprocessing, is never marketed, or is just plain silly. How silly? So silly that the IRS has given the Synfuels tax credit to companies that have done nothing but spray starch or diesel fuel or even Elmer's glue on coal. Corporations, ranging from utilities to the Marriott hotel chain, have leapt through this loophole like wolves leaping for a lamb chop. The result is that they have dodged about $2 billion a year in taxes they owe, a wad that the rest of us ordinary taxpayers have to make up, either in increased taxes or reduced services. This scam will soon grow to $10 billion a year, for more corporations have spied the lamb chop and are going for it. Finally, the IRS decided to crack down by reviewing whether the company's so-called sin fuels actually worked. Yet, even this long overdue step was assailed by sin fuel profiteers, their lobbyists, and their puppets in Congress. They went after the IRS, threatening the agency's enforcement budget and hauling the IRS commissioner to the woodshed. Unsurprisingly, the IRS recently succumbed to the corporate pressure. This is Jim Hightower saying, so the loopiness keeps getting loopier and the rich keep getting richer.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
At that speed, definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot, you're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute, that's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the ultimate, if you will, in questions. When is war just? Is our war in Iraq just? Are we doing the right thing there? Have we gone too far? What is happening in Fallujah? Why do the people hate us so much? These are tough questions. I don't claim to have all the answers, but we're learning from each other today. And I would welcome your calls. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. We're going to go to one of those calls now. Someone's been hanging on for a while. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. How are you, sir, or ma'am?
Well, it's a sir. It's Don in Atlanta.
Hey, Don in Atlanta. What do you think about this ultimate question?
Well, I want to turn it around on you.
All right.
You know, from what your last caller just called, the fact that United States and Mr. Unger's book, you know, saying that we supplied the, say, the Saudi royal family with all the weapons, then we took their money to safeguard it. In other words, they had to have weapons to protect the oil fields from nationalization, and they had to have a place to safely invest their trillions of dollars. I think there's well over $1 trillion, which could really hurt Wall Street if the Saudi royal family decided to get tough and just pull those out. Maybe we could stop them. Maybe we couldn't. Maybe the Supreme Court would say it's their money and they could take it out. But they do have quite a bit of financial leverage in our bond market. And like you said, you know, the Bush family goes way back, and, you know, a lot of industry goes way back between the two families. But my point is, if we're complicit with keeping a despotic ruling regime in Saudi Arabia, then aren't we adding to this cause of war itself? I mean, how can we simply say we need to go in and attack somebody? Aren't we creating conditions that cause us to be attacked?
I think you're right. I mean, I think that it's very difficult and troubling, our relationship with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, in fact, gave more funds to Al-Qaeda than any other nation on earth. Taliban gave them a place to train, but for someone like me, I mean, everyone knows in Congress. In fact, there were 28 pages in an intelligence briefing that Bush refuses to release, and it's not because of the names of spies. They could black those out. It's because there are 28 pages of details of Saudi aid to Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. And I think the reason the Saudi government does that is they feel that they know, I guess, that their power really isn't justified. They're certainly not elected by anyone. And they know that to keep the Islamic, particularly people who want Islamic State, after all, this is where Mecca and Medina are. It's in Saudi Arabia. To keep them from overthrowing the government, they support these madrasas, these schools, where they send imams, Muslim imams, throughout the world, where they're Islamic peoples, and teach them hatred of the United States, teach them some really radical principles, and they feel like if they do that, then no one will bother them. Frankly, Egypt does the same thing with the Islamic Brotherhood. And I agree, it is very problematic that we support Saudi Arabia, and I would think that we need to push them, and push them hard, maybe not push them out, but, I mean, Colin Powell went to Saudi Arabia just recently. When he went there, they arrested, just a week ago, they arrested 10 people who wanted reform. The reform they wanted was a constitutional monarchy, which is a great way, it seems to me, to do a transition to a democracy. And we didn't do anything about it. Powell didn't say anything on his trip. He didn't refuse to go like he could have. He didn't protest. I mean, I think they're taking us for a bit of a ride here.
Well, I agree with you, but you know, you've got to admit it's nicer than to put the bulk of their money in this country's banks than somewhere else in the world. So, you know, they can dictate to us to some degree. But I agree, it's just simply paying off protection money. They know that they really don't have the soldiers and the army to fight a terrorist type organization. You know, a local uprising would be the worst thing they could have. They've got a lot of weapons and tanks and the jets and all that, but you know, that doesn't work too good in the type of war that they would be brought into. I would like to get your view now with Prime Minister Sharon's problem. And I have a concern. He seems to be fairly moderating at the moment. Maybe he hadn't actually done anything, but he's saying, you know, he's going to vacate Gaza Strip. But if he is removed, could Israel even go further to the right and make it a worse situation?
Well, by the way, I mean, if he's corrupt and he's indicted and he's involved in a bribery scandal, he should be removed like any Democratic leader.
Couldn't they maybe stretch that out a little while, considering the fact that he's going to remove Gaza Strip? Let him do that, then take him out of office?
Well, I think they're separate issues. I mean, a corrupt politician should be removed, period. They have to prove it, but it looks like the evidence is pretty strong. If it is, and he's proven guilty of taking a bribe in a court of law, he should be removed, just like if Tom DeLay is proven of taking a bribe, it relates to the Nick Smith controversy here in the United States over Medicare. But his party, the Likud party, would still be in power. And I don't know if Benjamin Netanyahu, who is the former prime minister of the same party, Likud, who has some corruption issues himself, would take over. I don't know the position would change too much. At the end of the day, though, because Israel is a democracy, it can moderate its views. And that means that, you know, for all the people that go around hating Sharon, I always point out, you know, Sharon is not the cause of troubles. He is the result of troubles. And Israel can have a no-confidence vote in a minute. They never have one party control the whole parliament there. Because they've got like two dozen different parties.
No, but could this happen? I mean, I sometimes think that when Prime Minister Peres was assassinated, Rabin was assassinated, that was actually a coup. Now, could that happen again? You've got the most rabid people on the right now at the crossroads of history. Do they cede land? Do they take land? Do they build a fence out? You know, these are the hardest questions Israel's probably faced since those wars 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you say it's a coup. I wouldn't use that word because, I mean, when Kennedy was assassinated, I don't think that was a coup. I mean, obviously the assassin in both cases meant to get rid of the head of government.
Well, but it could have been a coup in the sense that we had a deep involvement in Vietnam because of that. I mean, I think it's pretty certain Kennedy would have gotten us out at some point. He certainly wouldn't have got in very deep.
Oh.
And, of course, when Johnson came in, they opened the floodgates up. And, you know, most historians think Kennedy would have never got that deep into Vietnam.
Hey Don.
So in that sense, maybe it was a coup.
Well, I agree with you that assassins change history, all right? If Lincoln hadn't been killed, I don't know that we would have been in the horrible of Reconstruction either. Assassins change history. I wouldn't call it a coup, though. The reason I wouldn't call it a coup is because a coup to me is an unlawful taking of power. And although when an assassin kills a leader, if they have a lawful someone following up, then I don't think it's a coup. I'll give you an example of a coup, though. Bush is president because of a coup. Gore was elected by the American people, by the majority of the people in America and in Florida. The Supreme Court installed Bush even though he was not the choice under the Constitution. That is a coup. Killing a leader is a horrible thing, and it does change history, but I just wouldn't use those words, I guess.
Well, okay,
but let me answer your question.
If
Sharon's kicked out, I think the answer is that Israeli policy is generally more reactive, that if you see suicide bombings go down, if you see terrorism slowing down, I think the Israeli people, the great majority of them, would love to have a two-state solution. If you see suicide bombing increasing and more attacks, I think you'll see harder right leaders from Israel.
But the question is, who's going to lead Israel if he does have to?
Well, the answer is it'll be someone from the Likud party. I don't know whether it's going to be Netanyahu or some new upcoming person.
Well,
and my point is, if that person goes too far, Israel can have a no-confidence vote and get rid of them.
Well, but isn't that the stated plan of Netanyahu to expand the borders of what he considers proper Israel, which goes along with a hard right in Israel? And some people, what I'm reading is he's not extreme enough. You know, once you get to be president, you know, you can't, you know, just politic on what you want to do. Now you've got to really face the world. He may be more moderate once he gets back in
office. I think that's what happened to Sharon. I think Sharon was hard right leader. But once he came and became prime minister of Israel, he was forced to moderate his views. And that's a good thing. I don't have a problem with that. So I'm not particularly worried.
But it's a little bit odd, though, that here comes, just as Rabin was removed, here comes Sharon. This scandal, which happened, four or five years ago, is just now coming right out in the open at this point. I mean, they could have done something sooner, maybe later, but they're doing it right now at the opportune time because of the decisions got to be made in the Gaza Strip. So I'm just wondering if somebody in the far right's not somehow having enough influence to get this indictment and get, of all people, out, General Sharon out. Maybe he's not as useful to that view anymore. But, you know, the Likud party was founded over the issue of expanded settlements.
Yeah, no, I hear what you say, Don. You could be right. I'm not willing to say I have enough information to know whether you are right. But I'll tell you this. My impression of Israelis is the great majority of them, they may disagree about some places where the border should be in the West Bank. I think most of them want to unify Jerusalem. But virtually all of them want to get out of the Gaza Strip. It doesn't make any sense for Israel to be in the Gaza Strip. So I think that policy has enough support that Sharon or no Sharon, it'll happen.
Well, let's hope so.
But we'll
and,
see.
You know, maybe you can get the inside scoop. But let me make another point.
Okay, make it quick because I got another caller holding.
Okay.
Oh, I lost my other caller. Hey, caller, come back. All right. See, we talked too long. But no, go ahead. Make your point. Now we have time.
The Dick Clark, or Richard Clark, is our Paul Revere of the day.
Well, you're right.
You know, I think he is. And, you know, and all
he's
this
a real hero.
Started with the October surprise. And for people who are not maybe aware of that, the October surprise was when George Bush, number 41, who was unelected at the time, of course, went over and made some kind of agreement with the Iranians to hold those hostages until after the election, which assured Ronald Reagan becoming president. Of course, that's when they paid him off for those spare parts and got caught and started having the Iran-Contra and all those hearings.
Hey, but Don, I want to get you back on topic. When do you think is a war just, in general? Can you tell me when or what wars have been just and what wars have been unjust in your mind?
Well, they're obviously just if you've been attacked, and after that, maybe you repel an attack, then you go on the offense to gain buffer zones, you know, which has been the history of Europe, have buffer zones.
How about in Kosovo, if you try to save people who aren't attacking you?
It's something like that, definitely. Now, you could say the argument, why not? Why isn't it a great thing we remove Saddam Hussein if it's because of making people's lives better? I mean, you could make that same argument that even if there wasn't weapons of mass destruction, we had the same rationale to go in there to take Saddam out as we would have, you know, ethnic cleansing in Kosovo.
Well, I don't see them as the same, and I'll tell you why, but let me hear your reason first.
Well, I don't see them as the same either because, one, like you said in the earlier call, those people meant nothing to us when we supported Saddam. He was a brutal dictator. But I would like to say I've read some history from Saddam's viewpoint as far as the Kuwaiti war, and he was led to believe by the Americans, if you invade Iran, if you take our weapons of mass destruction, the chemical weapons, if you use them on these people, if you do all these things that we need, and, of course, it's known that Reagan pumped $8 billion into Iraq during the mid-'80s.
Right.
If you do all these things, then we may look the other way, or he got some kind of signal that Kuwait,
which
we claim historical ownership to anyway, we may let you have that as the spoils of war.
I'll tell you, April Glaspie was the ambassador under George H.W. Bush. And at the time, Saddam Hussein was complaining that Kuwait was basically drilling oil wells at a slant. The idea was they would put the well above ground at on the Kuwaiti side of the border, but that the thing would go below ground at a slant, grab Iraqi oil. I don't know if that's true or it's not.
Well, I've heard
but April, it was just one second.
Equipment that were doing the engineering. You know, the Kuwaitis can't engineer anything like that.
Yeah, it may Somebody have been. But what April Glaspie said was, we have no position on your border dispute with Kuwait.
Saddam thought he was justified, but I think we set Saddam up as the biggest sucker in the world. I think the main reason that we gave him, or maybe an important reason we gave him those biological weapons, was simply because we could go back in there and say, look, we know he's got them. We gave them to him. That's our pretext for invasion. That's our pretext for getting to the oil. And we could put 200, 250,000 soldiers in there. So I think Saddam double-crossed George Bush by getting rid of him, really, because he needed something to justify that war. But I think they were the Ronald Reagan administration, I think Reagan had no idea. I'm sure Cheney and Rumsfeld Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl did. If we can set Saddam up and give him these weapons, then we can go in and say we made a mistake and we're going to go correct the mistake.
Hey, Don, thanks for your call. I always appreciate when you call. You know, I think Don raises some good questions. You know, what is it? Why did we sell arms to Iraq to begin with? I mean, a lot of it was to fight Iran. Is that justified? Is it justified to help one dictator fight another dictator? And before you rush and say, no, it's not, and I don't think it was justified with Saddam Hussein, hey, you know, we did join with Stalin against Hitler. So these aren't easy questions. Hey, join in the debate. Please do. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. 877-577-2667. I want to know from you when you believe wars are just, what wars we fought are just, and how do we get out of this? How do we get out of this blowback, which is a term the CIA uses for unintended consequences? How do we get out of the problem where we support one dictator against another, and then that dictator is overthrown, and then the people hate us? Whether it's Iran or Panama or the Philippines or Saddam Hussein, we keep supporting these dictators, and then it always comes back to haunt us, doesn't it? How do we get out of that? How do we decide when war is just? The other thing I want to raise is something that a couple people have mentioned. Evelyn from Houston mentioned it. Roy from New Mexico mentioned it. But I didn't really answer the question of what do we do about innocent civilians? What do you do if someone's attacking you and hiding behind civilians? I just read recently that one of the things that the Palestinian terrorists did is what they did is they went to a mental hospital. And they started shooting at Israelis out of the mental hospital. The Israeli soldiers responded. And it turns out no one was hurt except the terrorists in this case. But the article in the Washington Post said that the mental patients were quite scared. And the people at the hospital were very angry at the Palestinians for using it as a base. Saddam Hussein, in fact, hid a lot of his weapons sometimes in mosques and schools. What do you do when your opponent doesn't play fairly? How do you fight back when someone is shooting at you and surrounding themselves with children? It's a tough question. I want to see what you think. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Toll free, 877-57-SCOOP. And make a donation to radiopower.org while you're at it. And then we'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
4 years ago, the U.S. Department of Energy created a special program to compensate workers at federal nuclear facilities who may have been exposed to health-damaging radiation on the job. 4 years later, with some 22,000 applications for aid received and tens of millions of dollars spent on the system, a little more than 300 workers have received any contact from the Department of Energy, and only one check's been cut. At a Senate Energy Committee hearing this week, it was revealed the private contractor in charge of the nuclear worker compensation program charges twice as much for its services as it would cost the government to do the work itself. At present, the DOE spends $1 million a month on this particular contract.
As the Labor Department prepares to implement rule changes stripping overtime pay for as many as 8 million Americans, Illinois state lawmakers want nothing to do with the plan. The state legislature just sent the governor legislation blocking any changes to federal rules governing overtime pay for white-collar workers. And Wednesday, the AFL-CIO held a protest outside a Bush fundraiser in Washington, D.C. Kathy Stobird is a nurse in Pittsburgh who spoke at the demonstration.
President Bush's policies to end overtime pay will devastate the nursing profession by driving even more nurses out of hospitals, which will ultimately cause a patient care crisis in this country.
The Office of Management and Budget is currently reviewing the Bush administration's final overtime regulations and could approve them any day now.
Turbulent skies again for U.S. Airways. Less than a year out of bankruptcy, airline executives have told the workforce the company may go into Chapter 11 again unless it can cut costs by another $1 billion a year to compete with no-frills airlines. These would be on top of $1 billion a year worth of concessions union employees already committed to as part of the bankruptcy process. U.S. Airways pilots and mechanics unions this week called the proposals unacceptable and may lead a drive to call for the resignation of senior airline management.
Irish workers can breathe a little easier this week now that the government has issued Western Europe's first national ban on all workplace smoking. Pub owners are complaining about lost business due to relocated weddings and conferences, but polls are showing approximately 80% of Irish people support the ban.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If you hear President Bush tout his federal budget plan for next year as an achievement in his campaign, don't believe the hype. The Economic Policy Institute took a close look at the Bush budget and noted there are numerous funding increases in politically sensitive areas that, if Bush gets another term, are slated to take cuts that will offset their election year windfalls. A good example is the Department of Education. It stands to see a funding gain of more than 2% next year, then would face an average 1% cut in funding for the next four.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, bringing you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know, and trying to bring you news and information and analysis that you can't get in the mainstream media. And I think that sometimes you get the facts. I mean, we know what happened in Fallujah. We know the Americans were killed there. We know that Iraqis marched through the streets to mutilate the bodies that were out there. And but I don't think necessarily we know why. Why is it that our government is not seen as legitimate there? Could it be that because Bush appointed everyone in there? If the United Nations or an international force were there, would we be seen as more legitimate? What if we had taken Saddam Hussein's offer to have elections in Iraq? I've heard whenever I make this argument, conservatives roll their eyes and say, "You would have trusted Saddam Hussein? Are you an idiot, Mark?" Well, he offered to have free elections. What if we called him on it? What if we sponsored a UN Security Council resolution binding him to his offer? And then if he didn't do it, well, then wouldn't we be more justified? Wouldn't the Arab world understand more why we're there and the rest of the nations are there if he breaks his promise? And do you think it's a good idea for us to leave July 1st? Whether you supported the war or not, is it the fact that we're leaving July 1st? Does that, you know, relate to the terrorist attacks against us? Is this just something that Bush is doing before the election? How are we going to control Iraq afterwards? Should we even try? And if Iraq descends into civil war, is that partly our fault? These are difficult questions. When you plan for war, you have to go and you have to figure out the rest. But I think it's fair to say that we're not exactly considered liberators by a lot of Iraqis. I mean, when they took down that statue of Saddam Hussein, remember that? Do people know that that was mostly our people? The people we came in with, the people from exile, do people know this? I mean, I think the people in Iraq were glad to see Saddam Hussein gone, but I don't think they wanted to be ruled by us. Nationalism is a very powerful thing. And, of course, what we're doing now is we're not acting very democratically. Just recently, George Bush has been censoring the Iraqi news. Now, the Iraqi news says some awful things. The Iraqi news kind of reminds me of Fox News, right? They and some Arab newspapers are full of some vicious lies, just like Fox News called Clinton a draft dodger, right? Even though Clinton wasn't drafted, you have even worse, I guess, the Iraqi news telling lies about us. But is censorship the right way to go? I mean, shouldn't we fight free speech with free speech? Or can we censor them? I mean, if they have textbooks that are teaching hatred of America, you know, can we censor them? These are tough questions, and I think that part of the thing we have to figure out when we're doing a just war is, you know, what makes it just? I mean, how do you know if your war is just? If we're in Vietnam to save people from communism and the people don't want to be saved from communism, well, are we being just? Maybe they should have been. Maybe the southern Vietnamese should have realized that, hey, we were the good guys. Maybe Iraq should realize we're liberators. You know, we're just trying to bring you food. I doubt Bush's motivations, but I don't doubt the motivation of our troops. I don't doubt that they think and hope that they're doing a lot of good for these people and reconstructing the country. But a lot of people don't want us there. The recent polls in Iraq, it's very interesting, is that if you take out the Kurds, who obviously support us and have for a long time and hated Saddam Hussein, if you take out the Kurdish population, the population overwhelmingly doesn't want us there. And so I think and I've said this before, and I'm the only one I know that says this, but I think we should have a Kurdish state. I think that sometimes secession is just. And in the case of the Kurds, they don't have a state. Their state, I think, is just. And you know, there's so many difficult questions here. The question I asked before the break, and if you'd like to answer, I'd like to hear your answer at 877-57-SCOOP. What do you do when someone is attacking you unfairly? What do you do when you have a terrorist attack, terrorism going after children and innocent people, someone shooting at you, say, with a child in his arms, or hanging out in a mental hospital, or storing bombs at the bottom of a mosque, or as the Palestinians have done, they take ambulances. When someone's hurt, like a Palestinian's hurt, they will take an ambulance to the scene and say, let us go through the checkpoint, soldier, and then they'll hide bombs in the ambulances. Well, that's not exactly fair. But maybe all's fair in war. How do you fight that? I do want to say, though, and I picked on certainly the Palestinian leadership enough because I don't support their tactics, that they're certainly not representative of entire Palestinian people. There's a wonderful article in today's Washington Post by Mona El-Tahari. She's the managing editor of the Arabic Women's E-News and a columnist for a London-based Arabic newspapers. And she points out, quite rightly, that 60 prominent Palestinians went public just this week urging their people not to retaliate for Israel's killing of the terrorist Hamas leader Yassin, but instead to transform the violent uprising of the past 3.5 years into a peaceful protest for statehood. She writes, quote, we won the first battle during the first Intifada when it was a peaceful movement. We've got a piece of land and an authority, regardless of good and bad, and now we're losing the second one. We became terrorists because we didn't understand what happened on September 11th. We didn't learn, and we don't want to. And a woman from the United Arab Emirates wrote that she wished more people would speak out against the suicide bombings. This author writes, I'm not the only Arab writer to condemn suicide bombings or to call for nonviolent resistance, but how many here in the United States or in the Arab world hear our voices? And I think she has a good point. I think there are many people who do not support the terrorism of the Palestinians, who support a Palestinian state, but say, if you're going to go try to kill children, you know, if you're going to strap your own children full of bombs and put it on your back, and then, I mean, there was a case just a week ago where you had an 11-year-old who didn't even know he was carrying a bomb, and he goes in near some Israelis, and the Hamas leader, by remote control, tries to blow up this little kid, this Arab child, and it fails. The whole thing fails. But here the child didn't know. This wasn't a child willingly being a suicide bomber for the cause. This was, you know, a victim as much as the Israeli children he meant to blow up. So what do you do when you have people who don't fight wars fairly? Whatever the justness of a cause, is it ever just to go and to kill civilians? I want to hear from you. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. If you have a just cause, is it just to kill people's children? Is it just to go after them? Was it just what we did, you know, with the atomic bomb in Hiroshima? Maybe that one was just to end a long war, to save a lot of lives. I don't know. I want to hear from you. When is war just? When are tactics just? 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. And you can also email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. I'm going to read some of my emails. I got an email from John in San Diego. He says that one difference between our war in France and Iraq is we didn't occupy France, as we are now occupying Iraq. John writes, we occupied Japan after World War II, but we did not sell off Japanese resources to foreign companies while boxing out domestic companies from being able to bid on the reconstructions of their own country. Same for Germany. He goes on to say that one aspect of Arab culture seems to be when you really, really despise someone, you desecrate their bodies. Apparently, that is one way of extending the insult to your enemies. Actually, John, on that issue, I read today that at least under Islamic law, that's not the case. It's actually forbidden under Islamic law to desecrate these bodies. And, you know, I'm sure they meant it as a way of showing us how badly they hate us. But I think sometimes we forget that there are people who want peace in the Arab world, and their voices are getting drowned out by the people that want murder. And I guess it goes all the way down to the basic question, when is war just? Hey, give me a call, 877-57-SCOOP. When we come back, I want to explore the question of secession, whether it's the American Civil War, the American Revolutionary War. I want to know, or Bosnia or Ethiopia or South Africa, there's a ton of examples, Northern Ireland. When do you think it's fair for one country to separate into two? Are borders, you know, always the right thing? When should we allow it? These are tough questions, folks. I don't expect anyone to have all the answers, but I think they're important questions to raise. In fact, I think they're questions we should raise before we go to war. And hey, one trivia question. See if you can figure out what in the United Nations, there was a big dispute between the Bush administration and Canada and European nations on the one side. And the Bush administration was with the Arab Muslim nations on the other side. What issue at the United Nations led the Bush administration, the Vatican, and a whole host of Muslim countries on one side, and Canada and Europe on the other? Do you know what that issue is? I'll tell you, if you can't guess it, back after we come, after these messages on the Inside Scoop. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Give me a call, let me know what you think. We'll be back with more.
It's back. The thing that just won't die has returned in mutated form to terrorize the good people of our country, gorging itself on gargantuan fistfuls of our First and Fourth Amendment rights. The thing was once known as TIA, Total Information Awareness, the Orwellian/Frankensteinian creation of John Poindexter, the disgraced, convicted, and totally loopy former operative from the Reagan White House. Brought in from the cold by George W., Poindexter set up shop in a wing of the Pentagon called DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. At DARPA, the maniacal Poindexter put together his TIA, a supercomputerized program to gather every scrap of data there is on everybody, from our bank accounts to video rentals, our medical histories to photos of protests we've attended. All of this was to be sifted and sorted, ostensibly to detect suspicious behavior that would tag someone as a possible terrorist, noting that this would make millions of Americans suspected terrorists and amount to a wholesale invasion of our people's privacy. The public screamed. Congress cut off TIA's funding, and Poindexter ultimately was forced back to disgraceland. But wait, TIA did not die. It morphed from DARPA to ARDA, Advanced Research and Development Activity, another secretive spook agency. While publicly pretending to kill TIA, congressional leaders had quietly funneled money to ARDA to resurrect TIA as the thing, which is now pursuing the exact same assault on our privacy as TIA was, even using some of Poindexter's old crew. ARDA says that its thing can wolf down a petabyte or more of data. How much is that? A petabyte will hold 40 pages of text on every man, woman, and child in the world. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help us finally drive a stake through the heart of this thing, call the Center for Democracy and Technology, 202-637-9800.
Well, I wonder who that could be. Can I help you?
Ah! Everybody, run for your lives!
A pack of crazed baboons. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a quieter floor with Plectanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Plectanium holds onto nails better. That means your subflooring won't rub against them and will be less likely to squeak. Plectanium plywood. Build it better.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Toner and photoreceptor sold separately.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're asking the ultimate question, if you will. the question of when is war justified? When, if ever, should the United States or any other country go to war? And I've been asking some difficult questions here. I want to praise all my listeners for trying to answer them. I don't know that I have the answer or that anyone does, but I think it's a very important question to ask. When is it justified to go to war? And I think particularly as we look at what happened in Fallujah just a couple days ago, it's important for us to know where we stand on this. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Toll free, 877-57-SCOOP on your telephone dial. Call up and let me know when you think war is just. Or you can send me an email by sending to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. I don't always have as much time to read the emails as I do, though, to take your calls. Before the break, I was asking about what do you do if people aren't playing fair, if they're attacking civilians. And I think the answer is that it really isn't justified. I think if you're being attacked and you fight back and you accidentally kill civilians, I think that's very different from intentionally killing civilians. But, you know, there's all kinds of examples. There's our atomic bomb in Japan. There's our firebombing of Dresden after that long war, World War II. These are tough questions. And I want to raise the question of secession. I mean, have you really noticed that the two great wars in American history, the first one was a war of secession, and the second one was a war against secession? You know, when we talk about the American Revolutionary War, we talk about the Civil War. A lot of people don't focus on the fact that in the Revolutionary War, we were part of Great Britain, and we wanted to leave Great Britain, and they wanted a union with us, right? And then, of course, in the Civil War, the winning side, the Union, wanted to keep the states together. Now, you can say, well, we were just in both cases. In both cases, we wanted democracy. And in the second case, it was slavery that we were fighting against. But I just think it's interesting that people don't focus on it. They focus on the winner in their view. And if you look at Chechnya in the Soviet, well, I should say in Russia, or Eritrea in Ethiopia, or the Basques in Spain, or the Kurds in Iraq, if you look at Israel, or Northern Ireland, or Chiapas in Mexico, Tibet in China, you see example after example where you have a majority population ruling over a minority, and the question is, when should the minority be allowed to secede? And I think that's a tough question. In all of these cases, there's a group of people in one part of a country trying to secede from the remaining part. And sometimes people consider these causes just and sometimes unjust. But why? Why? Maybe the religious or ethnic or linguistic group seeking to secede, maybe it's our own. Maybe the secessionists have democratic values and the state they want to secede from doesn't, or vice versa. You know, maybe the secessionists aren't democratic and the main state is. Maybe the secessionists render their possibly just cause unjust by resorting to killing citizens. Maybe the main state renders its cause unjust by resorting to killing civilians or, in the worst case, genocide. How do we know? How do we know when war is just? We all have our prejudices. But I would argue that the clearest definition of injustice is to treat like situations differently. I mean, maybe even if we can't agree on what the parameters are, what the solution is, what the scheme should be for what's just and what's not just, it seems to me that we should be able to at least theoretically develop examples of what's just and what's unjust. And please don't tell me, well, the UN has done that, because they haven't. If you look at the United Nations, they are nothing if not hypocrites in terms of praising things and condemning things that are exactly identical, but just not happening to the politically correct country at the time. And I know people that always point out to me international law. Whenever I talk about these issues, they say, well, Mark, the international law says da 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 da. Well, one of the things I learned in law school, to my surprise, I should say, is that international law is meaningless. And I was really surprised by that. I had a long argument with a professor, I remember, at Yale Law School, and he called me the textualist because he said, I always want to follow the text of the law. Kind of ironic for a good liberal, right? I'm acting like Scalia. I want to follow the text of the law. And he said there is no international law because there's no enforcement. Treaties, yes, there are treaties. And when you have treaties, that's like a contract between two countries. That's enforced. But sort of international notions of human rights, they're just not enforced. Certainly the Hague, the International Court at the Hague, has not enforced anything by any just standard, right? They're not going after Algeria. Sometimes we get them. Sometimes they go after Milosevic. Sometimes they don't. So how can it be that if there's no international law, then it seems to me that we need, as a president of the United States, we need someone to basically decide or at least say what their view is as to when war is just or not. Again, if you want to contribute, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. I hope you'll call in and give me your ideas. We got about 18 minutes left to take your calls. And I also want to read some of your emails to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. But it seems to me, I guess, that it makes sense for nations to have the right to secede when they have very different, whether it's religious or ethnicities or linguistic views. And we can argue about what it would take. I would say that maybe two-thirds of the people should have the right to secede. We might have to vote. I think that borders should be valid unless, you know, there's a very strong argument to the contrary. But, for example, the Kurds, I think, is a great example. They should be allowed to have their own state. I don't think, though, that if there's already another state existing, there necessarily needs to be two or three or four. You may know that in World War II, Hitler argued that the Germans of the Sudetenland, which was part of Czechoslovakia along the border, that they were German and they should be part of Germany. And Czechoslovakia said, well, you know, if we give up that land, then we can't protect ourselves, we can't protect our borders, because there's certain natural borders there to protect us. And Hitler insisted, and the Czechs were kind of forced to give in. You may know of Neville Chamberlain, head of the Prime Minister of England, who said, we have peace in our time, and he gave up the Sudetenland to Hitler. And after he did that, Czechoslovakia lost its borderlands, and Hitler could march right in. Sometimes I fear that's the case with Israel, where if they give up land, then they give up a nice defensible border at the Jordan River to basically have indefensible borders. And of course, the Sudeten Germans, you know, there already was a German state, just like, of course, Jordan is majority Palestinian. On the other hand, I do respect the right of people to rule themselves. And I think that if you have a democratic-based movement where people want to rule themselves, I think that generally we should allow it. What do you think? The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I want to get to some of my emails. I got an email, again, from John in San Diego. He writes, unfortunately, we are defining anyone that opposes U.S. foreign policy as a terrorist with no further debate, discussion, examination, or education. Obviously, there's some people that are motivated to strike out against others. Why? Are they just married to concepts of violence and oppression? That doesn't seem probable to me. John writes, our lack of examination of the conditions, motives, cultures, and traditions of others renders moot the question of whether this war or any war is justified. Of course, the Bush administration thrives in keeping the U.S. population ignorant of what is happening anywhere, foreign or domestic. There is no way to determine what is just in an environment of ignorance toward those you are warring against. As Gandhi would say, truth never hurts a cause that is just. If you want to attempt to determine what is just, first seek the truth. Don't cover it up. John, I think those are very good points. I think that education is the key. We have to know what's going on in the world. We have to know that there is no Iraqi people. You know, Bush talks about the Iraqi people as if they're all one people. They're not. They're not. They're three peoples. They're the Shiites, the Sunnis, and the Kurds. They don't get along. They don't think of themselves as one nation very often. And I think we have to know exactly, you're right. I mean, we have to know the traditions of these various countries. We have to know why they dislike each other. I think that's one of the reasons why we were slow to act in Kosovo. So I think it's important. We have to know where we are and who we're supporting. Absolutely. One more email. This is Ed from Morris Plains, New Jersey. Ed says he wishes he could call in, but he can't. And he disagrees with my analysis. He says that in Afghanistan, we did work with the Kuwaitis and the Kurds. The Kurds, as you know, are part of Iraq, very similar to the Northern Alliance. That's true. We did work with the Kurds in Iraq. He goes on to say the thugs that are shooting us are a minority of thugs that want us to leave, so that the Sunnis can once again dominate the Shia majority. These are Saddam sympathizers, possibly allied with outside Sunnis from Syria. If you look at the Sunni triangle on a map, Ed writes, you'll see where we're dealing with a very small area of trouble, and the vast majority geographically of Iraq is doing much better than they did under Saddam. The war has already been a tremendous success. I think we should fence in this area, give them time to send their women and children out, and then launch a firebomb. Whoa. You know, Ed, it's fun arguing with you, but I understand the need to separate the Sunnis and the Shiites. In fact, I've argued for it on this program, to separate them from the Kurds. I don't know that fencing them in and then launching a firebomb is the right way. I don't know that even you believe that, Ed. I think you're just trying to goad me here. But I think you're right that many of them are trying to dominate the Shiites. And maybe the answer will be an Iraq civil war. Maybe not all civil wars are bad. You know, hopefully we can get them to work together and to find a border. But maybe even probably, that's where we're headed. We're headed towards civil war, and maybe the answer is we shouldn't have a role to play in it. We got 10 more minutes. I'm going to go to one last commercial. If you want to call in and be heard in the last 10 minutes, please do so. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. Call in toll free and let me know when you think war is just. Back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Never die. They just get loopier and loopier. One such is a special tax break gouged into federal law back in 1980 by corporate lobbyists. In response to the energy crisis of the time, this loophole was ostensibly created to give companies an incentive to devise marketable alternatives to imported oil. But all it really has done is give companies an excuse to dodge paying the taxes they owe to Uncle Sam. The loophole is the Synfuels tax credit for companies that reprocess coal to create new synthetic fuels. But the law's provisions are so vague that corporations have been able to claim the tax break even if their reprocessing doesn't work, doesn't reduce our dependence on oil, actually uses oil products in the so-called reprocessing, is never marketed, or is just plain silly. How silly? So silly that the IRS has given the Synfuels tax credit to companies that have done nothing but spray starch or diesel fuel or even Elmer's glue on coal. Corporations, ranging from utilities to the Marriott hotel chain, have leapt through this loophole like wolves leaping for a lamb chop. The result is that they have dodged about $2 billion a year in taxes they owe, a wad that the rest of us ordinary taxpayers have to make up, either in increased taxes or reduced services. This scam will soon grow to $10 billion a year, for more corporations have spied the lamb chop and are going for it. Finally, the IRS decided to crack down by reviewing whether the company's so-called Synfuels actually worked. Yet, even this long overdue step was assailed by Synfuel profiteers, their lobbyists, and their puppets in Congress. They went after the IRS, threatening the agency's enforcement budget and hauling the IRS commissioner to the woodshed. Unsurprisingly, the IRS recently succumbed to the corporate pressure. This is Jim Hightower saying, so the loopiness keeps getting loopier and the rich keep getting richer.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
At that speed, definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot, you're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute, that's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
We're back here on the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about when war is just. We're reflecting on Fallujah, what happened 2 days ago, and why is it that it's happening? Why don't the people want us there? You know, President Bush said that we'd be liberators. And they said the cost of reconstruction would be $1.7 billion, Now it looks like it's going to be more than 150 billion, 100 times the effort. So why aren't we succeeding there? You know, here it is. We're planning to leave in July, right before the U.S. elections, but we still don't know what government's going to be in place. Why hasn't this war succeeded? When is war just? Is this not succeeded because it wasn't a just war? Or maybe we just haven't fought this war justly, or maybe not the right way strategically. What do you think? The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. And coming up just at the very end of the hour, I'm going to talk about the political cartoon that I predicted a couple days ago, and the one instance that we know of where you have the United States standing with the Vatican, Iran, Syria, and Saudi Arabia against such countries as Brazil, Belgium, the Netherlands, France. What is the one issue where we support the Muslim nations, and they're all against Europe? We're going to come at that at the end of the hour. First, let me go to a caller. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from?
My first name is Michael.
Hello, Michael. Where are you from?
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I wanted to interject two very, very short poems that I wrote.
Okay, about war?
I'd like to preface it with a vote for Bush was indeed a vote for Gore with blood and war. And the two poems that I'd like to recite, one is very short and the next one is very short. And the bad one is, yippity-yap, clatter and clack, go the humans in their attack. This time it'll be different, it'll be just a flash. Our pictures will be taken, but Kodak won't enact. And on the positive note is, a piece of pie, a little piece, give away a piece, a little piece. All have peace, a little piece of pie.
Okay. Do you have a comment to make about when war is just, or do you just want to read your poem?
I think war is never just.
In any case, World War II, Kosovo, no war is just.
I think that let's deal with the present time. And I feel that diplomacy and talking with people and having them be able to identify with a persona is much more important than punching them in the nose and then saying, I want to be your friend.
Well, what if they refuse? What if, I mean, Al-Qaeda attacked us and killed 3,000 Americans. You wouldn't have responded militarily?
No, I don't believe that no response is a reasonable proposition. And I respectfully suggest that all parties should look at options that are positive, that will not precipitate war and anger and anxiety.
And what would have been a positive response to 9/11?
Would be that rather than engaging in a war, would be to actually prospectively go after the individuals that are responsible for creating the problem.
Okay.
As expeditiously as possible.
Go after with force against them.
Whatever force is necessary,
okay.
But using dialogue and using honesty.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Not bribery and promises and you know, you'll be the dictator this year and, you know, we'll uphold you until we no longer have use with you, like the gold spurs that Donald Rumsfeld gave to Saddam Hussein.
Yep.
that were in his museum, I guess, before it got blown up.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call, Michael. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
You know, I think there are people that are against war in all cases, but even Michael was saying, you know, we have to go after people that attacked us. And I think we do have to go after people that attacked us, but try to do it in such a way that we don't inflame everybody else. I think the great difference between Iraq and Afghanistan was that even Arab nations who don't like us very much understood that when the United States was attacked and 3,000 people were murdered, we had to respond. And sure, there are people that in the Arab world that were doing conspiracy theories that were claiming that you know, the United States attacked its own buildings, or that Israel attacked us, or all this crap. Sorry, but most Arab, at least the intellectuals, understood why we're in war with Afghanistan. Most Europeans did. Most Canadians did. When it comes to Iraq, we couldn't explain it. We tried to say weapons of mass destruction, and it wasn't there. And I think when even Canada is saying, you know, what's going on here, we have to watch it. Hey, thanks for this very terrific debate. I want to just address two side issues. First of all, I want to talk about a political cartoon. I said on, when was that? I think it was Wednesday, day before yesterday, that if I could draw, I would draw a political cartoon of Bush and Cheney testifying before the 9/11 Commission, and there would be Bush as a dummy on Cheney's knee. I said, I can't draw, but that's what I would do since they've insisted that they can only testify together and not separately. Well, I opened up the Washington Post today, and lo and behold, there's Tom Tolles. And the 9/11 panel is asking, why do you have to testify together? And there's a dummy, George Bush, sitting on Dick Cheney's knee. And Cheney says, do you want me to answer that or him? And the panel says, him, while you drink water. And Bush says, that violates our guidelines. You know, it was just really neat to see that, well, a lot of people have the same idea. And to answer my trivia question, what is it that the Bush administration and the Vatican and Iran and Syria and Saudi Arabia all agree on and disagree with the Netherlands and Belgium and France and Brazil? What? Gay rights, of course. There are spousal benefits to the United Nations that Kofi Annan wanted to give. He wanted to give partners of gay employees benefits where they're provided in the country, like Belgium and the Netherlands. Brazil supported that too. But the Islamic countries are firmly against it, as is George Bush. George Bush joins with the Islamic countries in being against human freedoms, even where those countries allow it. Now remember, Kofi Annan just wanted to give these benefits in countries where the benefits are provided, like Belgium and the Netherlands or soon to be Massachusetts. But no, here George Bush stood firm with Taliban-like countries, theocracies, to make sure that religion should control and not human rights. So don't say George Bush is always against Islamic values and you know, Islamic virtues. In this case, George Bush agrees with the Muslim world. No benefits for gay people. Well, that's it. I think we've had a terrific show. I don't know that we've resolved the issue. I don't know that anyone can resolve the issue of the whether and when war is just. But I want to let you know that I really appreciate your calls and the effort to try. And I think it was a terrific topic. I'm going to be gone Sunday and Monday. It's the Passover holiday. I'll be celebrating it with my family. I'll be back live on Tuesday. And in this Passover and Easter season, I wish everyone a season of peace. May we never go to war except under the most egregious circumstances. And in all those cases, let the war be just. This is Mark Levine signing off. Tune in Sunday for a great repeat of my show with Congressman Rush Holt talking about your right to vote. Monday, they're going to put Tony Tripiani's show in my time. And then Tuesday, I'm back here live for another edition of The Inside Scoop. See you then.